Hello and welcome to Fidelity Connects, connecting you to the world of investing and helping you stay ahead. Markets have been correcting themselves over the last few weeks, and here today to provide his insights is Jurjen Timmer, Fidelity's Director of Global Macro. Jurjen will take a closer look as to why this correction took place, what it's done for inflation expectations, and how COVID and the upcoming US election will impact the markets. Commentary surrounding COVID-19 and financial markets is frequently changing. Today's podcast was recorded on September 28th, 2020. And as always, for more of Jurjen's research findings, you can follow him on LinkedIn or Twitter at TimmerFidelity. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada ULC or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy, or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
When we spoke last year, it was really the first trading day after the death of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Markets continued to sort of fall from last week onwards. Give us a little bit of a sort of stepping back a couple of feet, what we witnessed there.
So the S&P fell 9.8%, so let's say 10% from the high. The NASDAQ was down 14%, but of course that correction started a little earlier. But what really happened here was, you know, we had the death of Supreme Justice Ginsburg, which normally would not necessarily be a market event. But in this case, the market had been already waiting very patiently and increasingly impatiently for the next wave of fiscal relief. So that would be phase four of the CARES Act, because a lot of these unemployment benefits and other relief payments or transfer payments had basically run out in August, and here we are in September. And so the two sides, of course, this being an election year, were pretty far apart in terms of the next bout of stimulus, with the Democrats, you know, coming in with $3 or $4 trillion, and the White House with maybe $1 trillion. So they were far apart. And then however little momentum was already there got pretty much taken away by the now, of course, very heated political battle over who and when the Supreme Court should replace. And so that, I think, really caused the market to fall last week. You see the S&P down 10% from its high. The high was 3588 on the S&P on September 2nd. We went to about 3200 last week, but the dispersion of sectors. So, you know, really big weakness on energy, on the banks, on small caps. And normally in the last few months, whenever we would see weakness on one side, we would see it being offset by a rotation into like the FANG stocks, you know, the big secular growers, and also gold and gold mining shares. But last week, everything went down. There was really no place to hide other than maybe utilities or, you know, ultra defensive sectors. So we didn't see that rotation. And, you know, if we go to the small cap side, the Russell 2000 index, you know, it's not a happy chart. So this market, you know, has been correcting really for several weeks now. I think actually last week was the fourth week in a row that the S&P fell on the week, although last week it was only by a hair. So this is a bona fide correction, 10% broad based. So last week, 53% of the stocks in the S&P were made a new four-week low. Now, that's a very short-term momentum indicator, but it still shows you a fair amount of weakness. Fortunately, Friday, the tide started to turn as news came out that the Democrats actually are coming back to the table with a much reduced version. I mean, not that much reduced, but $2.5 trillion, I believe. And so the hope is that, that, you know, this is something that will happen. and that it doesn't have to wait till January, because the risk is that if they don't get a deal before the election, which is only 5 weeks away, it may have to wait until the next Congress is sworn in on January 20th. And so that's a long time to wait. And the reason why this is so important is, you know, we have an output gap, so which is the difference between actual GDP growth and potential GDP growth. And just for a backdrop, the definition of potential growth is growth in the labor force plus growth in productivity. And so we're 10% below that. And, you know, the Fed realizes that, the Congress realizes this, which is why we've gotten such extremely fast and robust policy intervention from both sides. But you can hear, like in the last few days, Fed officials talking, and they're starting to sound more sort of downbeat, saying, you know, we're like, hey, guys, we're doing everything we can here, but we need the fiscal side to also participate. And so I think that's what was really behind this. And I guess you could sum it up as, you know, the market was really running up nicely a few weeks ago on the sense of reflationary expectations, right? So lots of stimulus, lots of excess liquidity that causes the dollar to go down. It causes gold to go up. It causes real rates to fall, inflation expectations to rise. And looking at the S&P 500 total return since the financial crisis, if you run a linear regression through it and then add a standard deviation to it, you can see that the market really kind of reached the kind of the extreme of how far it can rally based on these reflationary hopes. So if there is a risk to the sense of rebound in the economy, not only because of a lack of fiscal relief, but also, as we all know, COVID cases are on the rise again in various parts of the world, it all kind of spelled a sort of a peak in reflationary expectations. And so that, I think, let kind of the air out of the balloon a little bit in recent weeks. And now it's really a question of, have expectations been tempered enough? And do we indeed get another shot in the arm from the fiscal side?
Well, let me ask you this. Was that a technical correction? I mean, you see Apple coming back. I mean, the mega caps still march on from here. Was that just sort of wiping some technical froth off a bunch of mega caps that are still going in the same direction?
I think it started out that way. So as we know, and we've talked about, it started out as a gamma trade, you know, kind of inside baseball a little bit. But, you know, we heard the stories of a large institutional player who owns a lot of these FANG stocks or these big secular growers was amping up their position by then also buying call options, lots, like billions of worth of call options. In a way, painting the tape, as we call it, because those are call options that a dealer has to sell. That dealer then has to hedge the gamma exposure, meaning the underlying versus the option. And so then the dealer has to buy the stock as well. And that creates this self-fulfilling prophecy. And that kind of little mini bubble sort of burst a few weeks ago. So this started as only a technical correction. We talked about shaking the tree and kind of letting some of the low-hanging fruit fall off. But then I think with Ginsburg, the news about Judge Ginsburg, and then the sense of, you know what, fiscal is going to be not a priority in Washington right now because everyone's battling over who's going to be the next justice, it morphed into something more real. Because, you know, we have the work-from-home stocks, which are the FANGs, and of course those have been a moonshot. So corrections there, I think, almost by definition are technical because the fundamentals still make sense. But the rest of the market, the reopened stocks, those have not really been crowded long. So there's nothing really technically to correct. So that pendulum swings up and down with the promise of a fully reopened economy. And of course, that's driven by fiscal relief and it's driven by the COVID curve.
And the other thing that was impacted, which you've been talking about a bit there, is the dollar. We saw it come back to be that safe haven. In fact, it was the thing going up, which lots of commodities get knocked when that happens. But gold was interesting because it got kind of washed out with everything as well. It was absolutely not a diversifier in that particular situation, was it?
Yeah, so especially last week, anything that was associated with the what we call the reflation trade, right? So that's a weaker dollar, tight credit spreads, higher stock prices, falling real yields, higher gold prices, higher commodity prices. All of that sort of came unwound, and certainly the fall in gold from 2075 at the peak to, I think, 1850 at the low last week, that's a pretty good sized fall. So I think it's one of these things where everyone is sort of in the same trade, even if they don't think they are, because you have this correlation, right? So the weak dollar is the same as a higher S&P, it's the same as widening TIPS break-evens, for instance. So here you see a pretty sharp reversal, and it's a reflection of people, a lot of people piling into the same trade, and then, you know, trades getting unwound. And actually, one of the most interesting parts is gold. You can see a pretty big fall there to 1850. Now it's up today. I'm still very constructive long term over the price of gold, because I do think ultimately, regardless of who is going to be in control over the White House and the Senate and the House of Representatives come next January, I think we can look forward to, if that's the right word, a pretty long period of higher debt levels, higher deficits, spending of one sort or another, maybe higher taxes if the Democrats take over in what we call a blue wave, for which, you know, who knows what's going to happen there. And so gold is a hedge against that. But it is interesting that there seems to be something going on in the gold chart that I think maybe is not a red flag, but maybe suggests that gold actually went up a little bit more than was justified. And we could talk about that in a moment.
Sure. I mean, let's talk about it in a moment. I'll get to some of the questions they've been rolling in here, Urien, for you. So back to sort of the COVID numbers, the pandemic itself, the virus. So the impact of the rising COVID numbers on markets, you know, what is it? Does the U.S. to an extent sort of look like it's just an extended first phase, whereas other countries actually kind of came out and are going back in? Are there any subtleties in there that make the actual market crash or impact the markets that you can see?
Yeah, I think it for the markets, it all comes down to whether there will be more lockdowns. But you're right. You know, the curve in Europe, you know, they had this big, strong first wave, and then this really it completely went away. And now they have a big, strong, like a very clearly identifiable second wave. I think in the U.S. was different. It was kind of like an extended first wave. I mean, who knows what to call it? I think in the U.S. it was just it was more a matter of where it happened. Right. It was like New York tri-state and they totally locked things down. And then you had the Sun Belt states coming up. And so it may have just been all different parts of a first wave, but they were happening in different places. And now those Sun Belt states are doing really well. But now like the Midwestern states like Wisconsin are coming up. So it seems to be a rolling thing more than a identifiable first wave and then a second wave like what we're seeing in Europe. Right. Because in Europe, we will look at cases in France or in Spain, and those are all countries with national policies. Whereas the U.S., you know, it's, you know, kind of the administration's guidance was more like, you know, the states can figure it out, right? So you had a much more disparate set of outcomes. But I think ultimately the markets are focused on the economic fallout. I mean, clearly, as new cases are rising in a bunch of different places in the world, the death rates are not, at least not yet. So it does seem to be either a matter of it's affecting different people who have less comorbidity factors, so younger, healthier people, college students, et cetera. You know, there's much fewer hospitalizations, much lower deaths among that cohort. And if that's the case, and it really starts to become a little bit more like the flu, and people, you know, do logical things like wear masks and socially distance, and everyone sort of gets it, right? And even if it's not a national policy, it's a policy from businesses saying you're not coming in our store without a mask. I mean, that in a way, the private sector then does what the public sector should have done but didn't do. As long as the economic consequences are not severe, I think the market can look through this and say we'll deal with it. But that has to happen. I mean, you know, my son is a college student in Dublin, and they're starting to lock things down again. And so you are seeing that play out. And I think That's what we need to be really watching. So I don't think anyone has any expectations that the death rate is going to go through the roof at this point, even though the number of reported cases are, because I think generally it's understood that this is hitting a healthier cohort of people who are less likely to die from COVID. And of course, the treatment options keep getting better. With every month, we get closer to some sort of vaccine or maybe a cocktail of vaccines that will not be a cure-all, but it'll be another way to keep at-risk people, you know, safe.
Right. The other question, one of the other ones coming in here, has to do with valuations. So we've saw what we saw the last few weeks, an actual correction. So how do valuations look now? The question is specifically U.S. valuations. Have they come off enough to look attractive? Are they still expensive versus other places around the world?
So the forward PE ratio is down 2 points from the recent high. But that's off of a pretty high, right? So the PE using 2022 earnings estimates peaked at 18.6, is now at 16.7. That's still pretty high. But again, as we've talked about in past weeks, it is normal for PEs to kind of skyrocket right at inflection points because of just the simple dynamic that the markets always are looking ahead. They are discounting the future, not always correctly, but they are always discounting. And so price will bottom before earnings do at major inflection points, just like it did in 2009. And in 2009, after the financial crisis, by the time earnings actually bottomed, which was 2 quarters after price bottomed, the S&P was already up 50% from the low. And that's exactly what's happened this time. Price bottomed on March 23rd. Earnings are bottoming now-ish. And as long as that's the case, then going forward, the PE will come down. I mean, it could come down because of a correction like what we just saw over the past few weeks. But they should also come down just because earnings are starting to grow into this market and the market will grow into its valuation. There, of course, is the other element, and that is the policy response. That is clearly driving valuations as well. When you look at excess liquidity, so the spread of money supply growth relative to GDP growth, when that goes up, PE ratios go up as well. So this notion of will there be another fiscal relief, yes or no, that feeds into the valuation component very directly, because if there's a lame duck Congress and nothing happens on the stimulus front, then the excess liquidity will start to evaporate, and with it, PEs. And again, I think last week the fall of PEs, but really of price, was very much driven by that fear.
One of the things I want to ask you is, you know, within sort of all the political dynamics that are going on, is there anything in the debate tomorrow night that could move markets? Or is there something that you will watch? I mean, I suppose if someone is, you know, clearly the winner, that moves markets on some level. But what would you watch for? What messages?
Yeah, the debate. You know, I never watch these debates because they're just so annoying and cringeworthy. But I have to say, I'm intrigued enough this time around that I want to see Trump versus Biden. So it'll be very interesting to see. And I would say, I mean, I'm not a political expert, but I think expectations are pretty low, probably for both people, but especially for Biden, because I think the Republicans have kind of, used the whole theme of, you know, Biden's not fit for office, although, you know, the other side could easily make the same claim, of course. But I think that if Joe Biden comes out as a strong debater, that's probably something that's not priced in the market. And again, that's not to mean that it has even a market outcome, but it could have an influence on the polling of which candidates wins. And obviously, if Biden ends up winning by a strong enough margin, then I think the expectation will be that that will almost certainly create a blue wave where the Senate then switches sides to the Democrats, which means that the Democrats then have a sweep of the House, the Senate, and the White House. And that certainly is something that will, it may not affect the overall market, but it will certainly affect different sectors, right? Because different sectors are influenced by who's providing the legislation. And of course, that would affect corporate taxes, which affects valuation. So I think that this actually is a debate that could move the needle, just because, you know, and again, COVID has something to do with it. Like when the president is in the news constantly because he's the president, but Joe Biden has been sort of, you know, like almost like sequestered in a way. There's not a lot of public events. And so I think it's his to lose in that sense, because I think expectations are on the lower side. So that's what I would be looking for.
Thank you for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. For more information on future live webcasts, please visit fidelity.ca. Don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter and subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice.